to help us explore the movies and music and painting and people that put life in the streets is my guest Joel Meyerowitz. Joel is probably best known for his gorgeous beach photographs collected in his book called Cape Light, but he's also the co-author of a book called Bystander, A History of Street Photography. One of the pictures that caught my eye in Bystander is called The Artist Lives Dangerously. John Gutman took the picture in San Francisco in 1938. Defined by crisp sunlight and the short shadows of midday, a boy kneels in the asphalt street. He's absorbed in his chalk drawing of the feathered headband of an Indian, just as a hulking car zooms by. Literally, art on the street by any means necessary. Joel Meyerowitz, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks, Kurt. Great to be here.
Now, in your book, Bystander, why did you choose the pictures you choose, and particularly, if we can start with the one I mentioned, the one from San Francisco in 1938 called The Artist Lives Dangerously?
Well, if I could just go back a moment to the initiating idea, you know, not everybody can work on the street. It takes a particular mentality, a sense of humor, a risky, chance-taking mindset that the street will provide opportunities that you could not conceive of in the studio or in a controlled situation.
Because they just come up on the fly and you have to take advantage.
Exactly. And it requires a kind of stance in the world, an acceptance of your open-endedness so that things in the world could give you the gift of your insight. And so I started looking at these pictures, and I had this idea that street photography, although accepted and under the rubric of documentary photography or photojournalism, actually is the center and the source of photography's energies. Because all else in photography relates in some ways to painting. The still life, the portrait, all of these things have even the landscape has a relationship to the history of painting. But street photography, when it was born, influenced a whole generation of Impressionist painters. It made them break the frame in a way. It made them or allowed them to see street life in a fresh sort of a nimbus of possibilities.
And it was a thing that until that time painters really hadn't done. And it was a thing that from the beginning photography could do uniquely as its own part of the artistic panorama.
Absolutely. Even with the limitations that photography had 150 years ago, there were still people who risked making the picture with a motion blur in it or the edges cut off. And for me, one of the important qualities of that was that painting before that was contained in the frame. You almost never saw something half in and half out. Photography dealt with those fragmentary moments in which something was leaving and something was coming on. It talked about the world outside the frame. So John Gutman's picture has about it the wit, whimsy, timing, improbability of all the best of street photography. That boy drawing on the street, the gesture of his body, the entrance of this huge vehicle. You almost can't know in the instant that these things appear, they're actually disappearing. And a photograph made at 250th of a second or a thousandth of a second slices this sliver. But in that sliver is the capacity for we human beings to have a perception. I think it's how we survived as a species, is that you could feel on the flicker of your peripheral vision that arrow, that spear, that rock coming at you, and maybe it allowed you the moment of survival. And I think photographers who use small cameras and work on the street bring to it that kind of capacity for sensing all in the environment and recognizing the potential of meaning.
When you were starting out a few decades ago in photography, did you know this is the kind of work you wanted to do?
Oddly enough, when I started, which was 1962, I had no idea of anything about photography. But when I saw Robert Frank make some photographs on a job, I was an art director, and he was shooting some girls in Stuyvesant Town over here, and I had to go and watch him do this. I knew nothing about Robert Frank, but he was such a wisp of a figure moving like smoke in front of these girls, and they paid no attention to him. He became invisible. And all I could think of was, I'm going to go get a camera, and I'm going to go out on the street. I want to do that on the street.
I'm Kurt Anderson with the photographer Joel Meyerowitz today. Joel, when you were young, obviously in the Bronx, there was, the only graffiti was the occasional piece of artless vandalism, I expect.
We drew in chalk on the streets, you know. That was our blackboard, and we had, you know, ample room and time to do it, but we never defaced public property in that sense. And so when graffiti exploded in New York, I wasn't a big fan. You know, I saw it in a sense as vandalism. And not that I couldn't appreciate some of the craft. I mean, as a kid, I did bubble letters and shadowing letters and, you know, Superman letters. And it was part of, you know, the way you doodle and scribble. Vacillating here because at the same time it's a sort of folk art from the ghetto, and it allows people to learn to use space and color. And I love when he said, I got the pewter gray, I got the blue in my pocket. I mean, I thought, yeah, I mean, they're seeing the color.
Well, it was also great to see the children notice that their father's graffiti had been vandalized.
Yes.
by somebody else, which, you know, it was a funny moment about whose ox is being gored and what is defined as a criminal assault. No, I am ambivalent in the same way that you are. It is an interesting example, though, of what happens a lot, has happened a lot in the last 40 years, of things beginning on the street, literally or figuratively, and bubbling up into the mainstream. You see it, obviously, in fashion all the time, and the sort of skateboard culture today, and hip-hop, too. And it occurred to me that when they were talking about the fact that so much of graffiti is about painting words, more than analogously, it seems to me, the great kind of inspiration and radical difference of hip-hop is that it's about words, in a way, that pop music, at least, you know, since Cole Porter, hadn't so much been.
Mm-hmm. It evolved. It appeared because it took the barricades in a way. And we had to, in a sense, or the administrations of that era had to confront them and say, no, you know, first they confronted them by making surfaces that you couldn't paint on or it could clean more easily, right? Those stainless steel trains and the like. And the graffiti artists found a way around it. They scratched or sprayed. But I think it forced a dialogue between the art world in its more static way and this non-art world that was erupting with color and scale and lettering and all this energy. And in a way, you create a new vocabulary in the time there. And it starts off as ugly, and then it achieves some kind of beauty. And all art since, you know, I guess forever.
Certainly for the last 150 or so years, yeah.
Yeah, it insults and then it elbows its way in through its rudeness in a way. And wonderful things come out of it, that his daughter is going home and drawing. You know, he's planted a seed in some way. I loved that. I thought that was so tender, you know, because you never know where you're going to get your instinct from.
Joel Meyerowitz is my guest today. I'm Kurt Anderson. In a minute, how the street inspires all kinds of art, including movies. This is Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International.